But now to the US, where the victims of a New Zealand man, Michael James Pratt, are still waiting for reparation for being duped into making porn videos, which were then widely shared online. 22 women filed and won a civil lawsuit after they were recruited and told their sex videos were for DVD distribution to individuals in foreign countries, but were instead placed on the Girls Do Porn website owned by Pratt. The 36-year-old is also wanted on criminal charges in the US, but has yet to be found. There was speculation he may have managed to flee to New Zealand. Our guest is Ed Chapin, who represented the women in their civil lawsuit and is seeking to recover more than $19 million that they were tentatively awarded by a judge at the start of this year. He is on the line from San Diego. Good afternoon to you, Ed.
Good afternoon.
Have I pronounced your surname correctly, Ed?
Well, it's Chapin.
Thank you. I'll get it right from now on. The FBI...
No problem.
Oh, you're welcome. The FBI has said this week that Pratt remains at large. Do you have any sense of whether he's still in the United States?
I have no idea where the man is.
This would have happened, I guess.
No idea.
Any ability to flee would have happened presumably before the pandemic hit. One thinks his movements would have been severely curtailed by that.
Oh, yes. He left the United States in 2019, in the fall of 2019, before we started the trial. And he's been gone ever since. They traced him to New Zealand, where he went. He saw his folks, apparently, for a while. But they say he's left, and they don't know where he is.
Is that disappointing to you, that authorities have lost track of him?
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, I'd like to know where he is.
He is wanted then on criminal charges, but where are your efforts concentrated right now?
I didn't understand you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Obviously.
Where is what?
Where are your efforts concentrated right now while you wait, hopefully, for him to face criminal charges?
Well, I'm not involved in the criminal case. In our system, it's two different systems, civil and criminal. And I'm in the civil aspect of the claim. And we are concentrating our efforts on post-judgment, in other words, post-award activities that we have to undertake in order to perfect our rights. And so we're in the process of doing that at this time.
There are two others involved in this, right? Two other offenders, alleged offenders. They are behind bars, right?
Yes.
And what is your role with respect to them?
None whatsoever. That's in the hands of the United States Attorney for the Southern District of California. We're very fortunate to have an excellent... United States Attorney for Southern District, and his office is prosecuting them.
What is happening, however, with one of the defendants filing for bankruptcy?
Well, that has slowed the process a bit because in our system, when someone files bankruptcy, any cases they're involved in are halted. And it requires people like me to go into court and get relief from that. It's called a stay order. In other words, an order halting the proceedings. And under certain circumstances, you can get relief. And so we have done that. And now we are moving forward to complete our process.
Can you explain to us exactly what happened to these young women and how they were duped, told one thing and something else happened?
Yes, happy to. There were some things in common. Each of the young women was reasonably attractive. They had an interest in modeling. They needed money. They were young, just out of high school or in early years of college in the United States. In one case, one of the women was in law school. An ad was posted on something called Craigslist. I don't know if you have Craigslist in New Zealand or something akin to that, but it's where people can post ads. And so an ad was posted for modeling for $5,000, a lot of money for these young women. And they would respond to the ad, and when they did, they gave them their contact information. Well, these scoundrels had the contact information, and they could follow on with the women. They could get on their social media and find out about them. In any event, the women were recruited under the guise of paying them $5,000 or $4,000 and promised that their video would never be shown to anyone they knew. Instead, the video would be marketed on DVD in foreign countries, primarily Australia and sometimes New Zealand, sometimes South America, but that it would not be on the Internet. Contrary to that, well, and before we go there, then the women would come to San Diego, take them to a hotel room. They promised that they would only be engaged in sex and filmed for 30 minutes, and in some instances it took 8 to 10 hours. But in any event, just before they started filming, the women were given documents to sign, not read, but to sign. They were told that the documents contained what they had talked about, which was a big lie. So the women are forced to sign these documents. Then when we brought the lawsuit, it was claimed those documents were contracts that allowed the defendants to do what they wanted to do with the videos, post them anywhere online, all contrary to the lies they had told them earlier. And during the case, the judge did not buy that. The judge ruled that there was fraud, which was our claim. They were defrauded into signing these documents, and they were of no force in effect. So they film, shoot the video, and within a month or so after they shot the video, lo and behold, people would come to them and say, hey, I saw you having sex on a video on social media. And then they learned that their videos have been placed on a website called Girls Do Porn, and uploaded to the largest pornographic website in the world, Pornhub, owned by MindGeek out of Canada. And it's all over the Internet.
There were signed contracts?
Well, the defendants claimed they were contracts. We claimed that they were worthless.
What is happening with trying to progress this at the moment, given COVID's impact on the legal system? Are you stymied at the moment in trying to advance the case?
No, we're able to move forward and do the things that we need to do. We're looking at other cases to file against other defendants. And that may be slowed, but for the time being, we're not slowed. We're able to do what we need to do.
A big matter also is to try and get these images, these films removed. Legally, can you require that of the host?
Yes. The trial court gave us ownership of the video. Or gave the women ownership of their videos. So we are now writing letters to the forums where they're posted, trying to get them to take them down. But it's a very difficult thing to do. Very difficult.
And if one comes down, another one pops up. Is it like that?
It's like a hydra-headed monster, yeah.
How strong is the law in California when it comes to being able to get porn videos where participants were unwilling or unwitting taken down?
Well, the law makes it illegal to use the name and likeness of someone without their permission. And that was part of our lawsuit. That's where the contract came in. The documents that they relied upon said that the women gave them consent, but the consent was obtained by fraud. So it was illegal. So we have that available for us, and it can be used to pursue legal action against forums that post these videos.
I think there is actually two New Zealanders amongst the trio who ran this operation. And the judge, the San Diego judge, in the civil trial last year, has ordered them to pay the women millions in reparations. Do you believe they have made millions out of this?
No question that they have made millions, but they've hidden it well.
What do you know about Michael Pratt? What have you learned from, investigators looking into him?
Michael Pratt is a very elusive person. He doesn't like to have his photograph taken, so there are very few photographs of him available. What have I learned about him? That he's a criminal, and he is someone who abuses women. He's a abuser, and I could say a lot of things about him, but he's a bad person.
Do you believe these women will ever see money out of this trio of individuals?
Well, I hope so, because if they see money, I see money. But if they don't get money, I don't get money. But I can't speculate. I don't know whether we will ever be able to recover money or not.
Money and reparations is one thing. What has been the psychological and emotional toll on some of your clients?
Well, there's two aspects to that. One is the trial outcome, the result of the trial has served to vindicate them because they were attacked. They were so heavily attacked by the defense lawyers in the case. And their character, their moral character was called into question, and they were really attacked very hard. The outcome of the case has served to vindicate them, that they were victims, they were defrauded by evil men, and so that has been good for them. But the trauma of going through all of this, having your video online, having people see you engaging in sex acts to these women who are, were young and impressionable and who had led reasonably good lives, and all of a sudden to have this come about was very traumatic for them. But I hope that the trial has helped to relieve some of that trauma, the consequences of the trauma, so that they can now focus on the fact they were victims and they can now get on with their lives.
Thank you, Ed Shapen, who is the lawyer for these women. 22 women who have filed and won a lawsuit against people who'd recruited them told them their sex videos were for distribution to individuals in foreign countries, but were instead uploaded to some of the biggest porn sites in the world, and where people they knew started seeing the films. Michael James Pratt is one of two New Zealanders who was part of that trio. Two are in prison. Pratt is still evading FBI authorities.